Accession number 10165, reel number 54.
Martin McLean, reel 54. You were telling me how you were appointed to the Army Recruitment Section in Southern Command.
They had a big lorry, a prime mover they called it, a thing that pulls trailers. It had to be picked up at Aldershot. They gave me a driver, and off we set off to Falmouth with this big lorry to join the column. This lorry had been in workshops, but the driver was nearly overcome with the fumes coming from the escape of gases the wrong way. So we were stopped a day or two while they put this right, and off we set to Falmouth. And I met this man who, funny enough, was a sergeant major who told me about the incident that Williams was involved with coming back on the HMS Delwarra. He had to go back to his unit, and I took over from what it amounted to is there was a little pickup truck for me. There was a great big 60-foot XRAF lorry. It had been done up into a marvellous piece of work. It was 13 foot 6 high. It had wide sides, and the sides had been run up. It was like a huge long van instead of being just the flat thing that the 60 footers was before. And on the sides they had canopies that go out and they'd prop up just like a sunblind. And there'd be fronts dropped down to cover the wheels and things. And when you took them down, there was a massive array of Royal Artillery gear, ordnance gear, parachute gear. In the back they had the signal equipment with the wire tapes that used to do the sound recording on them. The forerunner of all this taping that we do now, but they done it on a metal tape. And they used to let the people go up on stands and try speaking in it and using it. Well, all the stall was made up of moving models, mechanical things, and displays of different units who were recruiting for the Territorial Army. We had also a 3-ton truck with a trailer on the back. The 3-ton truck was for our kit, and I pulled a big, huge generator, which was used for searchlights, and we'd take this generator off to a side, and once we'd got the show set up, we'd set the generator off, which supplied electricity to light the place up, and also to set the working models off in action.
How successful and were you?
Very successful. We used to go from town to town on a schedule that was already laid down. And my job, I tell you, I was in Falmouth. And our job was to go from town to town, to village, through Cornwall, Devon, Sussex, Surrey, Hampshire, Kent, the whole lot of the southern country, showing up with this show of ours and set it up for this display. And they'd put also around us, the local units would bring in their ACAD guns, their artillery, their different weapons to boost up a good display. But we had all the music. We had records, which military music, amplifiers, the lighting, the generators, the whole lot to make up a show. And that was my job, going around from place to place with this huge prime mover. Now, we've got to consider this thing, this 60-foot trailer. The roads weren't motorways them days. They were narrow roads, especially around Cornwall and Devon. We caused more traffic chaos trying to get from town to town, place to place, with this huge thing going through the narrow lanes. And I had to be in contact with the local police. That was the PU's job, to tell them we were on the move, such and such, and we had to get through to such a place. And they'd have to stop the traffic no way through, unless the road widened about, they'd pull us into a lay-by and let all the traffic pass. But all this took an awful lot of time, and I found that the men were working awful long hours, getting from one place to another. And then once we got these places, I used to have to find somewhere for the men to eat and to sleep. Now, for this, we were given an allowance, a higher rate of ration allowance, which was about 1 and 6 months a day. We had to feed in these places on 1 and 6 months a day. Plus the fact we got about 7 and 6 months lodging allowance. That was to find lodgings and sleep somewhere. Well, I got over that easy. I obtained blankets for the men and palliasses, and I got the use of letting them sleep in drill holes, which saved them money. This was an amount of money per day, but the men were using it all up on food. Young National Service drivers and the oddbods I had working with me, they were starving, the young kids. We were down in Bodmin in Cornwall, I think it was Bodmin, and I rang up the adjutants of this place where I was at, and I told them, I said, sir, I said, something's got to be done about this. I said, the men. He says, what about the men? I said, the kids are starving. I said, they're out on the road here. They can either get clean clothing, they can't get haircuts. We're on the road so long and working such long hours. I said, the men are being overworked and badly fed. For instance, down in Bodmin, Cornwall. Yes. In Bodmin, Cornwall, the food prices were astronomical. So they sent an officer from the Royal Army Pay Corps to talk to me and speak to me on the subject of pays. Well, they gave us a special allowance after that, and they backdated us from the start of the mobile exhibition. So I had the job for me for doing this, to sit down and write out the forms in the complicated way of the claims week by week, day by day, for these lads who'd been on the thing. They finished up with £75, more or less, each. But anyway, the men were better looked after. They were getting haircut allowance, clothing allowance, laundry allowance. Seeing they were getting changes of clothing. We had to go back to Salisbury after a long haul with these vehicles, and lots of hours spent on the road for an overhaul of the whole machine. The welfare officer sent for me at Southern Command. He amazed me, this man. He had so many decorations, foreign decorations up. I don't know where he was, but he had an awful lot of decorations up. And he said, hello, Sarmadji. He said, I've heard a lot about you on this mobile column. He says, you've been making a lot of rubbish fly, and he says, you've been getting things done for the men. I said, yes, sir. He says, right, well, here we are. He says, your regiment's asked for you back. He says, I have here a letter from records office asking if you would go back to the 8th Battalion Durham Light Infantry as a PSI with an officer called Captain Greenwell. He's made the bid for you. Now, Captain Greenwell is one of my officers. You've got to look at the TA this way. It was a different sort of portion to the TA as compared to peacetime. When they sent a person to the TA, he was on the last few days of his service, getting too old for active service or for too much regular service. They sent them off these TA jobs and they finished the time with them. But Montgomery had said, in future, you can look this up, anyone, that when the Territorial Army is formed in the future, he would ensure, whilst he was in command, that only the best of warrant officers and soldiers would be sent to work with these men, and that all warrant officers would be personally selected. I went to the 8th Battalion. I was given a rifle company, one rifle company.
Which one?
A D company in Houghton-on-the-Spring. And then they found out that, well, during the investigation and looking through my records, I'd been a Vickers 303 machine gunner, which I mentioned earlier in these tapes, at Netherhaven. So I was transferred to support company. Now, I took on a devil's sight more work there. You look at the TA now, I was on my own. You go at the TA now, it's brimful of adjutants, permanent staff instructors. They have loads of people, regular lorry drivers and everything. I was on my own, and I had a full support company. Now, the companies were nearly up to full strength, with 3-inch mortar men, carrier platoon, anti-tank men. You mentioned we had it in support company. We had all the weapons and the equipment. Part of my job turned out I had to teach the men how to drive tanks. I was sent up on a course to drive Stuart tanks. I come back and I was taking men as Stuart tanks, teaching them machine gun. And on top of all this, I had a rifle company, B company. We had some very experienced men who'd been at war with these companies, I must say. And you see all the decorations for gallantry that was in them drill halls when they assembled. It was fantastic. They got decorations right, left and centre, whereas the regulars just missed out all the way along.
So you did administrative work during the week and then drilled them on the drill night?
I was doing administrative work all of the time and drill nights as well. It was only when I got men coming in for to do drills, they used to come in, men on night shift, pitmen, they had to be taken on train, take them on train, take them on driving, take them on lorry driving, all these sort of things. And I was on my own, and we had to keep a high standard of efficiency with our vehicles and our equipment and stores. We had a full war establishment, G1098 stores a lot. How I managed, I don't know, but there'd be a CO. First of all, there'd be a quartermaster's inspection of all the stores, and followed quickly by that would be a CO's inspection of the vehicles and the things, and then followed quickly would be the brigadier's inspection, his annual admin inspection. Now, we had four carriers, that's the track vehicles. We had two tanks, all which I had to have cleaned and deal with and clean myself as well, and we had one truck. We had all these weapons in stores, and we have to manage. And you hear these people grumbling now in the tea, they haven't got time for anything. Goodness, they should have been in my time. I'll say no more on that. I'd been with this company for quite some time, and we had to go to study for any, if we want any further promotion, we had to have a first class certificate of education. And an incident, a scheme of start where in the TA whereby any warrant officer who was staying in the army had to go to college, to Welbeck College, to study once again for certificates of education, which were equivalent to GCE level. While we were rusty, red rusty, we had gone back to ancient Britain days, couldn't reckon up fractions and things like that. We went to Welbeck Abbey, quite a crowd of us from the different units of the TA. Then we came back and we used to carry on at Bransworth Camp. This is additional in our own time, going up to Bransworth Camp, and they were taking on other lectures by Professor Jack from Newcastle University and other university people and army instructors. We had our examination and we had to take five subjects. We worked them in two groups. There was two in one group and there was three items in another. Map reading was a compulsory subject. English and mathematics is another one. The mathematics included logarithms, algebra, the whole caboodle that you could think of. After the examination, I came out there and said, well, Martin's got his first class certificate. And they said, well, Martin's got his, we've all got ours, because when at Welbeck Abbey, no way would I let the instructor go too fast for me if I couldn't understand. I'd pull him up. And the others did. There's incidents there, but as you see, we've got to cut the time. I won't go into. I met one officer there, a fellow called Caris Wilson, that sent me down an army education course when I first became a Lance Corporal down at Shorncliffe. And this man was there. And it was my turn to give a lecture. I think I mentioned it. And he gets up and he says, my lecture for this unit of the Seaforth Islanders, who are regular soldiers learning for their second class certificate of education, was the cause of the Great War. And one of the wordings I read up in the book was triple entendres. Well, I didn't pronounce it like that in French. I pronounced it as I read it, triple extenti. And this officer was sitting on me in me lesson. And he got up, made right fool of me, and he went ranting and raving. He says, it's not triple extenti, it's triple haunt. And he was at the school, the same man, at the same school at Worksop, Welbeck Abbey. And I got my own back at him. I intended to have my own back. We had to give a series of lectures, 20-minute lectures, to see if we could give a lecture to talk to people. And my lecture was in methods of instruction. And I'm talking about the Army's new ideas, of which we'd started during the war, by the way, and it was getting more developed. Methods of instruction, taking the man through the manual in a much more better and more descriptive way of learning a weapon or a lesson on tactics, anything of the sort, in a more descriptive manner. And we used to have notices, make our notices, and any aids at all, we used to make them up. And I said, you can come back with a lot of things. And this major was sitting in there. He was a major now, boss, more or less, at the school. And I said, you can plan all things as much as you like, but if you don't understand King's English, you're liable to land in trouble. And I explained about this triple entente. Do you know the answer to that? He went to the professor and tried to get me returned to my unit, and the professor wouldn't. Long story, I got me first, and I was delighted. I won't go into all the things that went on in the TA unit. I'll go back now to...
How long were you with the TA unit?
I was with the TA for about 2.5 years. And I was sent for one day by the adjutant and said, congratulations, Sergeant Major. He says, you're off. I said, where? He says, to the new TA, the new regular battalion, the foreman for Korea. Your RSM of the 2nd Battalion. Oh, delight and pleasure. Back to my old battalion. But starting from scratch at Barnard Castle. Off I went there, delighted, and they made me put up my insignia, RSM's insignia, changed all me gear. They had the painters and the tear door up. I've even got the box outside there now with me name and number on, and RSM on it, and a cap badge. And off I went, full of hope and glory, after the new battalion taking over RSM. I wasn't there very long. The people started drabbling from all over the shop, making up a battalion. CQMS there, Sergeant Major there, coming from all sources, like I was, TA from extra regimental employee jobs. I was delighted to be back. And anyway, I was sent for by the adjutant, Major Burden Taylor, lives in Gosforth here. And he always tells me now, that I was a fool, I should have stuck out, I should have been RSM. He says, you should have been RSM the second. Often says that in front of company now. What had happened is the RSM of the 1st Battalion had hurt his back. Great fella, great mate of mine, but it was still a dirty trick what they'd done to me. They made the drill sergeant major up the 1st Battalion to RSM of the 1st Battalion, and they seconded him, this RSM who was ill and never done a parade hardly, back to the 2nd Battalion as RSM, and I was told to take me rank down. I got very upset about this, and the CO and me, Mark Leather, we call him Mark Leather, Lieutenant Colonel Leather, who had also been a prisoner of war, and the second in command had been a prisoner of war. We had a right set to in the order room, just me and him, about me coming down to RSM. And I said, I refuse to come down, I'm posted by records as RSM. Anyway, I had to come down. There was no getting out of it. So down at the centres on the week's leave, and I back had come as Sergeant Major. I immediately applied for a posting out of the battalion. He wouldn't let us go. One day, with the battalion's reforming, we have a major working with us who'd been a brigadier with the airborne. He'd been in charge of the gliders. Murray, they called him. He was doing acting adjutant. He was just given the Buckshire job to help the adjutant, who was Burden Taylor, the man from Gosford. And he sent for me one day. He says, Sergeant Major, they've caught up with you. He says, now that you're a Sergeant Major, the 1st Battalion's going to Korea. He says, you've got to join the 1st Battalion. I said, right, sir, good. I said, no, I'm doing acting RSM. I've got to hand over the sergeant's mess and everything. Will I get any leave before I go? He says, you've got to be sent on leave straight away. Because the 1st Battalion apparently had embarkation leave and were more or less ready to go, and I had to take a quick leave and then join them and they were also in Barney Castle. Two regular battalions in Barney Castle, which was most unusual. So I went and got the senior sergeant major, start telling them I had to hand over the sergeant's mess, and I shouted along the corridor into the sergeant's mess to the mess caterer, get everything ready for handover, stock check of everything. And he poked his head around the corner. He says, what's this, Sergeant Major? I said, I'm handing over immediately, within the hour. So get everything ready for handover. Measure the whiskey, many bottles of whiskey, you know, stocked. And a man popped his head around the corner. It was Major Crossway, the second in command of the battalion, who, in his administrative job as his administrator, is responsible for the well-running of the sergeant's mess. He was in there checking stock and checking the goings on, the accounts, the ledgers and everything in the mess. And he called me forward. He says, what's this? I said, I've been told, sir, I'm off to Korea. I've got to join the 1st Battalion. I've got to go and leave immediately. He says, I've never heard of that. So off he went. And I get the sergeant's mess ready for handover, hand it over to a fellow called Lawrence. And I'm in my room packing up my kits, getting all the stuff and telling people what to do, passing out my instructions to different people. I'd hand it over in a quick sort of way. They were sending me off quick, so Double Hendermost let the RSM, who was sick, deal with the rest. He was in hospital, by the way. I was doing RSM, doing all the drill and everything in the battalion, trying to sort them up. I was in my billet, collecting when a runner come down. He says, Sergeant Major, report the CO immediately, at the double. So I run up to the order room and report the CO. And I'm in the room with him once again on his own. What's all this about you going to Korea, join the 1st Battalion? I said, I've been told that I've got to get packed up, hand in all my property, all my responsibilities, I'm going to join the 1st Battalion. I've got to take leave immediately. My leave has been got ready, warrants and things, so I can go home for a fortnight leave and join the 1st Battalion, who've already had the leave. And he thumps the table. He says, who bloody well told you this? I said, Major Murray. Well, apparently The second commander told the CO what transpired. The CO went for the adjutant. The adjutant knew nothing about it, knew nothing about this instruction. But they all knew that orders had come through for me to go to Korea. But they had stopped it, apparently. Now, Major Murray, who had received the first letter from records, post me, had told me the information. He'd gone off to play golf because he was spare time and he didn't care much about what was happening around him. And I couldn't find out how I'd found out. In actual fact, I found out years later on that they found I'd been going through the papers in the order room and I'd found this correspondence on it. Well, I found out later about it and I went back and told the colonel what I thought of his thinking of that of me, because it's one thing I wouldn't touch, a paper that wasn't with my name on. Anyway, he stopped the posting and he wouldn't let me leave the battalion. And we had a right row about it because I wanted to go to Korea with him. I'd trained myself fit. Whether I was fit or past the medical, I don't know. I still wanted to go. I'd wanted out the battalion any method.
You didn't mind the prospect of more fighting?
None at all. I'd look forward to it because I was a professional soldier. That was my job. And he stopped the posting. I was on manoeuvres once with him and he comes over to me and I was standing talking to the bugle major. I always went off on signal exercise where the skeleton company headquarters runners and things like that and signalers went off on exercises. They were getting very much updated in the field by these exercises, and I used to go as RSM. And he came up and he says, "They've caught up with you again, Sergeant Major. There's instructions for you to go off to Korea immediately. You've got to be sent off to join the battalion who's already on its way." He says, "Forget about it. I'm not losing the best Sergeant Major I've got. Forget about it." He says, "And if the information comes to you by any means other than as like before," he says, "disregard it. You're staying with this battalion." Short while after this, he sends for me after we'd had a drill the battalion. We'd had a presentation of new colours by the CIGS. We had a big, massive parade in Germany where the Americans came to watch it, the French army, the CIGS presented it. And then I'd just getting over this big parade. I drilled them day after day, night after night, the lads. That's 800 men on the square. You never hear of it now. There was once I forgot a word of command. That is, you form the men up from close column and you put them in line. And we have a system of giving the royal salute, which is given to all generals and things. You change it, general salute or the royal salute, whereby the battalion is in line, four companies of 120 strong in line, with the officers in front and the men at the back. I had the Sergeant Majors in front. I forgot a word of command, which is, "Battalion will advance and review order." And no way could I remember that word of command. Now, I'd been putting men on marked men's parade for slackness and drill, marked men's where they do extra drill. I put myself on 3 weeks marked men's drill, and I took the men, all the marked men's parades and the extra drills after that myself. They didn't like it, because I was a drill expert, and I punished myself in that manner. Short while after this, the CO sent for me. He came over the sergeant's mess to see me. He says, "Well, congratulations, Sergeant Major. You're RSM once again." He says, "The 8th Battalion, RSM's leaving the army. You're going there as RSM." He says, "Now, anything you want done in the way of your kit, done up, badges and things, you get done here before you go." So off I went to the 8th Battalion.
Why didn't he mind you going there, but he'd objected to you going
there? He couldn't stop us. It was a promotion. If it had been to Sergeant Major, he would have fought it. He would have kept us. He told me that. But a promotion he cannot stop. If he had been offered promotion, Brigadier, he'd been away like a shot. So I was back to the 8th Battalion. They were delighted to have me back, by the way. I was very well thought of. And the RSM that had left us, he was very well thought of. He had to go away before I got a handover. That was all right. I knew everything would be all right with Roy Armstrong, great friend of mine. He had worked hard to have a football team, and he also took them down to the Territorial Army Sports, and they won the Queen's Prize for the best sporting battalion. And all they had was, they won the Army Football Cup, they won a big race in a swimming bath down to Aldershot. Formed it. Now, that set something up for me to do. Now I had to take on the football and athletics, and new interest was coming on this Queen's Prize. So I started training cross-country runners who are new in the 2nd Battalion, who are now National Servicemen, and the TA. And I started training boxers and footballers. at, you name it, athletics, general. We went down to Aldershot when I took over. We won the Territorial Army's athletic events. We won the Army cross-country events. We also were in the semi-final of the Cup. I won't go into that. We were done out of that by professionals playing against us. The rule was no professionals to play against you because in the event of injury. But I found out by a report at the match-up at Lanarkshire Yeomanry in Scotland, there was 8 professionals playing against us. We went out of the Cup through that. But we won the Queen's Prize another 2 years in succession. So, in fact, the 8th Battalion DLI won the Queen's Prize, which had been only won, never been won before, 3 years in succession. And I was getting praised all over the shop for this. But it meant all my spare time was devoted, weekends and this, that and the other. I was also very interested in shooting. But I was giving the DLI my whole heart and soul, every little bit of my fibre. It was during this time when I was in the order room once, and an education corps officer came to see me, and they had their own education corps in the army, and he was a captain. He said, "I've come to have a chat with this army." He said, "I've got the adjutant and the CEO's permission." He says, "We've been going through your papers, and you've got an excellent pass in your first class certificate of education." And he says, "We've been greatly considering asking you if you'd go to university to continue your further education, but it would mean you haven't eventually come into the Army Education Corps." Well, if he hadn't said that, I might have gone to university. But as soon as he said a transfer from the Durhams again, the opportunity I missed, you've got no idea. One of my pals in the same battalion, he went away to the Army Education Corps. I don't know whether he went to university or what. He finished up Lieutenant Colonel. That's going, you know. And yet I was still RSM. We done well in the battalion, and I loved the battalion, but I come to the age of 45, I decided that's enough. I was working night and day. I was never seeing the family. Now, she was living in Newcastle. I was at Durham. An hour and three quarters by bus in, an hour and three quarters back. Leaving there by the last bus from Durham to get to Newcastle. There were slow buses them days, you know.
The 8th headquarters was at Durham, was it?
At Durham. At Jerseygate, where the new one is now. But the where they adopt the same name, but they pulled the old drill hall down, built a new one. I left that battalion, and I had a big send-off. But sad to say, after I left the army, I had no further ambition. I should have done better for myself in Civvy Street. I didn't look around for a job, but I entered Civvy Street the same way as I joined from the army. Lost. I didn't have a trade. And if you didn't have a trade, you were no good, you know. You were out. I eventually got a job on a security staff, and I'd done a good job there, and they wanted to keep me because I wanted to be in the post office where I could get out with a bag on my back and do deliveries and be available for sport. I used to referee the biggest rugby matches in India when I was in the convalescent depot. I mean, big ones. Army versus the RAF and the different things of that nature. And I wanted to continue on with the rugby refereeing. And I thought by getting in the post office, I'd get a bag on me back, get out early in the morning, and I was finished. I joined the post office. I never saw daylight. I was always on shift work, 3 days a week for the rest of the 19 years. I never did get back to rugby. I did land a good job in the post office, I must say that, later on, as civil defence instructor and first aid instructor. I mentioned before, I intended after the Arakan to learn first aid. Well, I became an expert in first aid, and I used to go around lecturing and talking and teaching classes from scratch to passing standard. I taught hundreds of children, men, women and young kids in this, for which you get no thanks. It's just you are out of pocket a great deal in this manner. But that was my life after I left the army. I was in the post office, and then when I left there, I was 64, and that was me finished. I still have an interest in the army. I started and reformed the Gateshead Newcastle branch of the DLI, which has got about 120 members now. A great thing, that's 11 years ago. I formed a new branch in Chesley Street, which hadn't been formed before. Another branch that's going well, great. Now, I'd got on with them jobs, now I want something else to do with Army, so I took on the job of organising the Tyneside Festival of Remembrance, something like the one that they hold in Albert Hall, Prince Albert Hall, in London every year with the Royal British Legion. For the last 4 years, the last 3 years, I've run one in Newcastle on a similar par. A lot of hard work, but now I'm reaching 76 and 60 years' time. I'm trying to pack it in, but I can't get anybody to take over.